Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good evening and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. We're going to be talking about issues on the state level here in the state of Ohio at the Ohio State House. We're going to be talking later this hour with Greg Lawson of the Buckeye Institute and talking about energy policy. And there's a bill right now in the Public Utilities Commission's committee at the Ohio State House. We'll be talking about that. And then first up, we'll be talking about the entire state budget as it's being discussed in the Ohio House right now as it's just getting kicked off. The governor has submitted his budget to the state legislature, and they'll begin the process of going through each of those items and putting together the biennium budget. And this is a ritual that happens every 2 years at the Ohio State House. And of course, we have a constitutional amendment that says that the state budget must be balanced. And with us on the phone is State Representative Keith Faber of the 84th District here in Ohio. You'll remember Keith, he was the former state Senate president last session, and he's moved over to the House to once again serve the people of his district in the Ohio House of Representatives. Keith, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us, and we've got a lot to discuss here in the next 25 minutes or so about the state budget. Now, things are just getting kicked off with the committees beginning to decipher the governor's proposals and, of course, counter proposals that the legislature has. There's a lot to consider. Of course, on the federal level, the repeal and replace of Obamacare and how that might impact Medicaid expenditures here on the state level. Now, a few years ago, the governor took the option, rather than entering into an Obamacare exchange, he rather took the option of expanding Medicaid over the objections of many, I might say, at the Ohio legislature. In fact, it was not approved by the General Assembly. It was done by the controlling board. And so it was kind of a really interesting way in which they did that. A lot of people objected to that. Nevertheless, the objections at the time was that the Medicaid expansion was going to be expensive. You know, it was going to be an undetermined amount of new people entering the rolls. The governor, I think, projected at the time about 250,000 more Ohioans would join the Medicaid rolls, but that has exceeded that limit by nearly now 700,000 new applicants under Medicaid. So there is obviously a very big number that has to be faced and how that's going to be wrangled with. But before we get into that aspect of it, let's talk about the overall state budget proposal that the governor handed down. What's your overall opinion of as we begin this process?
Well, first of all, the budget process is essentially a similar process that it always is. You know, the governor proposes and the legislature disposes, and we're full-on disposal mode right now. There are a lot of things that the governor has thrown out there that, frankly, won't last. The legislature in the House is starting to go through all those provisions. And in the end, you know, we'll land someplace, hopefully, that reflects the members' constituents and the things that they've said on and that they've run on.
Well, that's right. And of course, there's a lot of areas of concern. One of the things that's getting a lot of attention, of course, is he is proposing an increase in the state sales tax. Now, with his proposal, he's talking about cutting other income taxes, but a actual increase in the state sales tax. That didn't settle real well with our current state auditor, Dave Yost, who came out against the proposal of raising the state sales tax. What's your opinion of that?
Well, I think, look, this is one of those areas. The governor's goal is to lower the income tax rate and or do bracket compression. We are one of the very few states with the worst, most progressive income tax that has the most brackets. And so the governor's trying to compress those brackets and get moved towards a flat tax, which generally I support. What the governor's proposing to do, though, is effectively move a lot of other taxes around the deck chairs of the sinking Titanic in ways that, frankly, in and of itself aren't necessarily a good idea. I have historically been somebody who supports consumption taxes over income taxes, if you're just talking about general tax policy. But the governor's tax swaps here, his proposal, his estimates on billions of dollars of tax swaps are a mere $30 to $40 million in net savings to the taxpayer. That's so low to be, frankly, just an estimating error. And so when you do things like adjust in sales tax rates or tobacco tax rates or alcohol tax rates, often by increasing those taxes, you depress economic activity. And so there's no way that you ever have very accurate estimates. And we've never had very accurate estimates on those. And so literally by supporting the governor's tax plan, you could be in the position of supporting an actual tax increase under the guise of trying to do tax reform. For that reason and many others, I don't support it. I don't think it's going to have traction in this environment because the numbers are just so low. I think we can do an overall income tax cut or use it to flatten some of those brackets just by restraining our state spending and using the difference in the revenue estimates between the governor and the Legislative Service Commission, which usually have more accurate numbers. That could produce another $300 to $500 million over the biennium. And frankly, instead of spending that amount, I'd much rather use that to promote and do tax cuts or bracket flat.
This last year, of course, was an election year. Normally, that's a down economic time, both federally and in the state of Ohio. We were hedging on entering into a recession. Where are we currently? Are we in a recession, Representative?
Well, I don't think we're in an actual recession. I think we're getting close to it. The governor's people say that the numbers are slowing, the revenue estimates aren't being met. But again, some of those are just estimates, and it's tough to tell whether or not the estimates are too high or whether or not the actual economic activity is slowing down. Don't forget, we cut personal income taxes and small business income taxes significantly. And so to see the income tax numbers slow is to be expected. And so what you're seeing is that the numbers seem to be slowing more than their projections. And so right now the question is that because our projections were in error, like I just mentioned earlier with the governor's plan and whether or not $30 to $40 million, while it's a lot of money and the scope of a multi-billion dollar plan, it's very little, whether or not those estimates are the problem or whether it's a slowing of economic activity. But there's no question Ohio's economic activity seems to be slowing a little bit. And while I don't think we're in a recession yet, we have to start being very concerned that we need to do things that are going to drive the economy, grow jobs, and strengthen Bob and Betty Buckeye's ability to support their families.
The rainy day fund, where is it currently? What's the rainy day fund? What's in the bank?
Well, the rainy day fund is, as you know, the state savings account. It's a little over $2 billion. In the last budget, we increased the ability. It was capped statutorily at 5%. We increased it to 8%. Most of all the rating agencies want to have between 8 and 10%. Remember, 5%, a state savings account of 5% is less than 18 days of state spending. I wouldn't consider you having a good savings account at home if you only had 18 days of your spending on account. The state shouldn't either. And so the state savings account of $2 billion, while, again, numerically is a lot, over the scope of the state budget of roughly $140 billion all funds, or a little more, it is a relatively small amount. And frankly, almost arguably insufficient to weather any economic downturn, which is what that's for.
The Medicaid expansion that happened a few years ago under the Obamacare plan, obviously there were numbers that the feds would provide back to the states, a very high number, somewhere like 90 or 80 some percent. So obviously the lion's share of it was coming from the federal government. But as time went on, the state would take more of a share. Now, with discussion happening in Washington with the actual proposal of repeal of Obamacare and replacement, without question, the Medicaid dollars from the federal obligation back to the states is going to decrease significantly, whichever way this goes. This is what we warned Governor Kasich about originally, and initially those who were opponents of the proposal of Medicaid expansion. The governor wouldn't hear of it and said, well, we'll just get out at that time. Well, it's not that easy, is it? How is that going to enter into the discussion of this biennium budget if on the federal level we see the renegotiation of Obamacare or replacement of it, and then how that might affect Medicaid dollars back to the state?
Well, it's exactly the situation that many of us were afraid of. Remember, many of us who didn't support the Medicaid expansion were convinced at some point the federal government wouldn't keep its deal. They anticipated and promised us that they'd pay 90% of the cost for the Medicaid expansion. Now they're talking about rolling it back into the state ordinary rates. If that happens, the Ohio language says, the language the legislature added after the governor expanded it, was that we're out. I hope everybody intends to keep that promise, because the reality is it's a multi-billion dollar charge to the state that we just simply can't afford. And I'm not going to support tax increases to pay for it, or eliminating money for K-12 education or other things we pay for in the state. And so at the end, it is what it is. But I'm very concerned that the federal government changes, which I support, frankly, Obamacare is a disaster.
Yes.
Are going to dictate new dynamics for the state. And that's why many of us have suggested that we do a 12-month budget on Medicaid, and anticipate that we're going to have to come back in and do fixes to try and adjust this. Here's the other problem with the Medicaid program. Remember, it was sold as something that was going to contain costs, and that we were going to be able to save money, and the projections were all going to be at relatively small growth rates. And the state was successful for a year or two keeping those growth rates down. But now it looks like those growth rates are considerably more than the inflation rate, and that it's continuing to be the Pac-Man that gobbles up all the other state resources. And so one of the things I know my colleagues in the House are working on is trying to bring the spending in line with those projections, and basically saying, no, Governor, we're not going to let you increase Medicaid spending at 4 or 5%. We're going to try and get it back down to the inflation rate, because the reality is we've got to be more efficient in this program.
Is there any way for the state to begin restricting making more severe criteria for those who would apply to Medicaid, or is this written into law as it is currently with the federal program, that the state doesn't really have much leeway, for instance, setting it at a certain rate of income? So there are people that are receiving Medicaid currently that could get a more discount policy on their own. They're just opting to take the Medicaid expansion, which is, you know, basically reliable upon the taxpayer to pay for that. Your thoughts?
Well, that's true. I mean, here's the short answer. Most of the federal Medicaid historically have been dictated by the feds, and you can seek waivers, but every time we sought one, whether it's half-hearted from the governor's office, or whether it's full-throated support, the feds have always said under Obama, no, we're not going to allow you to have flexibility, because we want the program to grow and be a poverty welfare program. But now under the Trump administration, a number of these waiver ideas that put competition back into the Medicaid program and do things like medical savings accounts ought to be more favorably received. So they need to go back in and do some of the things that we specifically instructed them to do in prior code sections and seek waivers. And so that waiver process needs to be done. And one of the things you do is you talk about income variability. You hit it on the head. If you qualify for Medicaid, remember, that's a no-cost program to you. Whereas if you age out of it, you have to pay a better share for the Obamacare. The subsidies are not at 100%. They're phased in. And so most people, when deciding for a free good or something they're going to have to pay for, generally pick the free good. And so we need to make that swap a little bit more transparent and a little bit more linear, so people don't have a all or nothing. So you start phasing people out with co-pays and deductibles, and to put some of their own skin in the game.
Well, that's right. And the industry itself will have a new invigoration to get back in the competitiveness of providing policies for people as well. I mean, all of them have kind of run for the hills, as it were, when Obamacare and even a single payer proposal was being floated by our socialist Democrat friends in Washington and some on the state level. The industry kind of just ran for the hills, or just ducked out for a while, but they're going to have to get back in and be reinvigorated to get back involved with the whole healthcare insurance industry. What do you suspect? Are you hearing some buzz among the industry that they are looking forward to that, or are they reticent to that, or is there any word at all interest on their part?
Repeat that again. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, the industry, the insurance industry, and obviously Ohio is home to a number of insurance companies that provide health care coverage. That's going to have to be more and more. Obviously, we're even hearing on the federal level portability, which we've never had in this state, and that is insurance purchasing across state lines. Now, I know that gets complicated for some in the industry, but is there any talk among the, those in the industry from your standpoint that are looking forward to getting back involved with providing insurance policies for people at various levels of the market?
Great question. I'm sure there are, but the problem is remember, Obamacare has so decimated the healthcare industry that that basically has left everybody out of the individual marketplace. If you're not in a group, meaning a large employer-sponsored health plan, it's tough to find people who want to write insurance for it. And that has led to cost. In Ohio, for example, in over half of Ohio counties, we only have one, and in some cases, two insurance carriers that are even writing the Obamacare policies or the individual policies. And I think it's like three quarters of the state has only one or two. And so it's a big deal to get these people back in the private sector. Now, the reality is once there's some stability and consistency from D.C. as to what the new plans will incur and the cross-border plans, you'll see the healthcare insurance people come back into the marketplace. But right now, Obamacare's killed the marketplace. And that was, some argue would argue that's what they intended. And certainly it's what we're seeing.
Well, and then that's why we hope that they'll be reinvigorated with a new agreement in Washington. And as that's moving forward, the president is determined. In fact, he had a speech last night with one of his outings, and he had rousing applause of his commitment to repeal and replace of Obamacare. So basically, he's going to work with those members of Congress. They're going to work with him to move forward on this measure. I think some of the Republican brethren over in the Senate are hoping nothing comes out of the House. But they're going to have to deal with this because the American people demand it. That's what the election has been about the last few cycles, and we're not going to let them off the hook. We want to see results, and so everybody's going to have to man up and get the job done, as they say. Well, we're talking with State Representative Keith Faber of the 84th District here in Ohio, and he's now serving in the Ohio House. Last session, you'll remember, he served as our State Senate President. Keith, also, one of the things that keeps coming up in the budget for Governor Kasich is he's wanting to put a severance tax on oil and gas. This is a region of our state with fracking in southeast Ohio, in that Appalachian area, that has been a big revitalization of that area and a help to them. And of course, now oil prices are down. This is no time to be talking about straddling them with a severance tax. Your thoughts on that?
I agree. You know, we've said all along that when the market's fully blossomed, it may be worthwhile to take a look at the revenue stream and to make sure that, one, they're supporting their local communities and paying for the infrastructure and things like that. But right now, I'm not sure it's the time. You've got oil rates that are down considerably low, and you've got a number of companies that have stopped drilling and expanding the marketplace. This is a place that where we are looking at some 20 to 40,000 Ohio jobs. And candidly, that's an area of the state that needs all the help it can get.
Well, that's right. And so that, obviously, that's one of those things which the governor is constantly proposing to find revenue. But it's going to fall on deaf ears, I think. Not only the proposal for the increase in state sales tax, but also sin tax with alcohol and tobacco. Some of those who argue in the border counties around the states of Indiana and Kentucky, West Virginia, they'll say, well, look, they're just going to go over state lines and buy their products rather than buying them at home. That's seems to be something that is retard the very interest in what you're trying to do and create revenue for the state. Your thoughts on that?
Look, I agree. You know, we need to make sure we can do everything to keep Ohio people competitive. You know, that's one of the discussions we have is that when you do things in Ohio, that puts an adverse impact on what our neighbors do. So we're certainly looking at these things and keeping an eye on it. But again, it comes down to the question of, ultimately, what are we going to do to make sure that jobs and economic growth happen here in Ohio?
This is a tight budget. The governor has stated that from the beginning and saying, you know, that we're going to have to pull in the belt here. He's making some cuts or proposal for cuts of various agencies across the state of Ohio to live within her means. That's a good thing. But there's always these things that seem to be runaway spending, whether it's education dollars and then Medicaid expansion and things that the state is already committed to. I mean, our population hasn't grown. We've been pretty much at a very stagnant population, 11.5 million people for over the last over a decade now. But yet the biennium budget keeps on increasing. Where are those increases coming from?
Well, largely our budget increases have always gone to two areas. Remember, 85% of the state budget goes to Medicaid and K-12 education. I've never heard of K-12 education folks, even though we have declining number of total students, say that we ought to decline the amount of money we spend on local education. And then Medicaid. I mean, we talked about that. When you did Medicaid expansion and you look at the numbers, I always encourage people to look at the off-on totals. And when we see line items appearing and then disappearing, it makes it real tough to track where the spending is. But if you look at the line item, the all funds totals, Medicaid expansion was multiple billions of dollars, and that's reflected in where you're seeing that growth. And remember, 90% of that's reimbursed by the federal government, but it's still money the state's spending. The other side of it is Medicaid's health care, and health care is growing faster than the rate of inflation. And so we need to figure out how to get that under control, because there's no way Ohioans, remember, Ohioans only have so much money to give state government. And frankly, we would argue they give too much. But if assuming that what we give in Ohio isn't growing at 4 or 5%, and healthcare and Medicaid's going 4 or 5%, at some point you have a disconnect that the spending goes up faster than Ohioans' incomes. For most state agencies, the other thing we're seeing, and as you know, I chair the Finance Subcommittee on State Agency and Board and Commission Review, what we're seeing is that when the governor negotiated the last collective bargaining agreement, it called for increases in the contract, and also health care costs are going up for all state employees. Add that what the DAS is doing on rent, and you're seeing it is not uncommon to see 3 to 8% increases per year just on the operational cost of expenses. Candidly, I think that's what's in there. Healthcare is going up in some cases 8 to 15% for the state. They DAS estimated its estimate healthcare cost increase for state employees was 13% a year, and we questioned them yesterday in our committee extensively about that. And I said that's obscene. Why aren't we doing a state medical savings account or doing things like that are going to reduce those costs? And the response was, well, you know, we collectively bargain our health care. Well, I'm sorry. At some point, we've got a health care system in the state that we can't afford. We need to get those controls costs under control. So ultimately, most of what we're seeing the increases are Medicaid and health care expenses. But there are state agencies that are doing a better job than others, but all of them need to do a better job. That's why I proposed the end of last session that outside the budget process, we do a holistic approach to review state agencies' efficiency, effectiveness, and transparency. It passed the Senate with overwhelming support. It passed the House with overwhelming support, and John Kasich vetoed it. And he said in his veto message, oh, this can certainly all be done in the review of the budget process. Well, Governor, I just disagree. The budget process gives the House about 6 weeks and the Senate about 5 weeks to look at $140 billion of spending, all of these new tax proposals, all of these new policy proposals. Its system is designed to keep the legislature from looking at detailed agency expenditures and effectiveness and efficiency in a way that's going to allow us to know whether or not they're doing what they can to be more efficient and transparent. So I reintroduced what is now House Bill 51. I would ask your support for it, and your organization's support for it, and all your listeners' support for it, to let their legislators know they need to support House Bill 51, because it calls for state agencies to sunset after 4 years if they're not specifically reauthorized by the legislature. Mm. And that evaluation is going to look at state agency effectiveness, transparency, and it's going to require half the state agencies to be looked at every 4 years. And if they aren't reauthorized specifically by the legislature, then they have the next two-year budget cycle to wrap up. And the reality is we need to promote efficiency, transparency, and effectiveness in state government.
So we can have
a budget where Ohioans aren't expected to dig into their wallets to support an ever-growing state bureaucracy.
Well, we're going to have you back, Representative. We've run out of time, but this is great. A lot of good material here. I know that they appreciate your experience over at the Ohio House, your years' experience at the state legislature, and I'm sure you're being tapped on the shoulder by a number of colleagues and asked questions, and we appreciate all that you're doing. We're going to definitely have you back. State Representative Keith Faber of the 84th District, and that's House Bill 51. We'll take a look at it, Representative, and thank you for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. God bless. Well, we'll take a quick break, and on the other side, we'll be joined by Greg Lawson of the Buckeye Institute. We'll be talking about energy policy. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
Those serving in our military, they're the difference makers. Separated from family, enduring hardships far from home, sacrificing for their country while serving in a different country. Well, for those of us who support our armed forces through the USO, we get to make a difference too. Through the USO, we get to be the force that delivers the phone call between spouse and deployed service member. The force that brings newborn and new parent together through a delivery room video chat. And the force that makes sure our military serving 7,000 miles away gets to watch the big game from a USO center. We get to be the force behind the forces, connecting them to every comfort of family, home, and country possible. It's a good feeling to make a difference. Visit uso.org/force to learn how you can be the force behind the forces.
And we're back. You're listening to News in Focus, a broadcast of the Ohio Christian Alliance. And if you missed any part of today's program, you can always catch it in its entirety at our podcast and also on our website at ohioca.org or just Google Ohio Christian Alliance. With me on the phone is Greg Lawson of the Buckeye Institute, and he is with the policy department there at the Buckeye Institute. We're going to be talking about energy policy here in the state of Ohio, and the Buckeye Institute is really the heritage foundation of the state of Ohio. It's tantamount to that. They're a research think tank. They do some great conservative work, and encourage you to visit their website to read a number of their white papers on and research papers on a number of topics. Certainly, they'll be covering areas in the current state budget that we just covered with State Representative Keith Faber. Also, what we're talking about next is with the energy policy in the state of Ohio. Greg, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you very much for having me. It's always great to be on.
Well, thank you. And I was checking out the website, actually a great website, the Buckeye Institute. We actually have a link from our website to yours. It's been there for a number of years. We've always referred to the Buckeye Institute when it comes to fiscal conservative issues. We know that it's a reliable source. Your people do great work in research. And most currently, the renewable mandate, the repeal of it, is being proposed again by State Representative Bill Seitz. This is a bill that passed both the Ohio House and the Ohio Senate last session, but late in December, unfortunately, Governor Kasich line item vetoed that bill, and there wasn't time to override his veto. Well, the legislature is taking another run at it, and in fact, next week I'm going to have on the program Mr. Bob Murray of Murray Energy, Congressman Bill Johnson, also Jim Martin of the 60 Plus Association, and we'll be talking about the progress that Cole is making as a comeback now that the Obama era has sunset. And with that, some of the ridiculous things that they just chained up the coal industry and literally were chaining up coal mines and plants that burn coal for energy. And it's actually, we're going to all see the ramifications of that. But now there's some light at the end of the tunnel with Mr. Trump basically signing some legislation and drawing back on some of the radical EPA standards that were implemented during the Obama years. Let's talk about that for a few minutes, if we would.
Sure. I think, first of all, it's extremely important that, from a national perspective, that we move beyond government mandates and government regulation that's going to destroy jobs. Obviously, any of the kind of stuff that you have with the so-called Clean Power Plan that the former Obama administration had put together was really all part and parcel of the war on coal. I know you've talked about that a number of times on this show, but there's no other way to look at it. The amount of reductions that they claim, and I use the word quote-unquote claim because there's so much variability in some of the science and the various studies done, but the quote-unquote reductions that they were expecting were trivial, and the real-life impacts were massive. This was a terrible decision. It was really just an example of government running amok from the Obama administration.
Yes.
And, from our perspective, too, we have to look at our state policies, and we have to make the right policies in Ohio so that as the new Trump administration makes the right call to push back on those regulations that the Obama administration had left, we need to make sure that we're ready to take advantage of that at the state level. And one of the keys to doing that is to have, from our perspective at the Buckeye Institute, a free market response. And that means that we need to be open to a variety of different energy sources, but we don't need to be putting our thumb on the scale of any one of them. And that is where the issue of the renewable portfolio standards here in Ohio comes into play. There's no other way to look at it than that this is a thumb on the scale in favor of the renewable industry. And, to make it clear, we're a free market organization. If the renewable energy sector was cost competitive and able to produce energy at a cost-effective way and be reliable in a cost-effective way, fine. That's okay. They should be able to do it, but they need to be able to do it on their own two feet. They shouldn't be subsidized, which they are, largely through a lot of different federal policies and tax credits and things like that, that essentially allow them to be subsidized and act and be able to produce energy below cost, below what's the real true cost. And the other thing is we now have this standard here in Ohio that is a mandate. It's a mandate that the utilities in Ohio must procure a certain percentage of energy from these renewable sources.
And renewable sources, we're talking about wind and solar.
Sun. Yep.
And, this is one of the things, and those on the industry, obviously, in wind and solar, they have, again, being subsidized. They've been given, a deference by Governor Kasich and his team while they've been here. And actually, without the subsidies, they wouldn't be able to produce or even compete with coal and oil and gas. And that's what's ridiculous, Greg, is that the consumer's paying for this. They're paying for it in their electric bill. Ladies and gentlemen, you're paying for these subsidies of this experimental market of wind and solar, these people. And I resent that. And I look at the electric bill for those on fixed incomes, that single mom out there in the urban center who's basically working two jobs to make it happen for her and her kids, for families, for seniors on fixed income. Why should they have to carry the burden of these mandates and subsidies for wind and solar? It's ridiculous.
Well, you're absolutely right. And you hit the nail completely on the head. There is, when I said the problem with this thing is that renewable energy cannot, at present, stand on its own two feet without the subsidies that you mentioned. And that is a significant problem. There's a lot of complex issues regarding the energy market and how electricity is produced and how it gets bid into the regional market and all those kind of issues. But at the end of the day, if you didn't have a lot of preferential treatment at the federal level, things like the production tax credit, for example, Fortunately, I believe that's being kind of phased out at the moment, but that was a credit for basically wind guys, producers who built big wind farms and things like that. They were able to get exceptionally good treatment where they were able to produce things at a cost that was not at all reflect because of the subsidies. They were able to do it at a level that was much cheaper than their true costs were.
By the way, I got to tell you, everything else aside too, those things really scar the landscape. I mean, when I look over and I'm traveling and I'm looking over the horizon, I'm looking over the sun, you know, the rolling hills, and then I see these monstrous windmills, which, by the way, many aviary species are at threat. I mean, we're talking about eagles, we're talking about various birds, we're talking about bats. I mean, where these things have been put up around the country, there's a real serious problem of them. I wonder why some in the Audubon Society hasn't, really spoken up about that. It just doesn't make any sense because they are killing a lot of fowl with the windmills. And, that everything else aside, I'm not a fan because I think they scar the landscape. But go on. I'm sorry.
No. I mean, actually, it's kind of ironic because there's all kinds of constant litigation about certain types of fish and things like that and complaints that you can't do some type of development in a particular tract of land because it's going to impact a particular species of animal. And there's constant litigation going on to deal with this. Environmental groups, Sierra Club, and a variety of others. I don't want to just pick on them, but they're one that obviously immediately pops into head one's mind.
And yet they turn a deaf ear when it comes to this.
They're not suing over this.
No. So they're hypocrites in that sense, and it's really outrageous. And in fact, there's been huge studies. I mean, bats are really important for our ecosystem in so many ways. And, I mean, this thing was killing tens of hundreds of thousands of bats out west, and it's a very serious problem. But they turn a deaf ear to that. I don't understand it.
Well, this part of the problem is that there's an ideology out there that if it's quote-unquote green, and there's so many flaws in what the quote-unquote, and I like to say it that way because they portray themselves as the defenders of the environment, and nobody wants to harm the environment. Nobody does. But they try to don this mantle that I think is a little bit overdoing it. And so the problem you've got is they're promoting policies that could never stand on their own two feet in a real free market. They want to put it the thumb, the big heavy hand really of government on the scales to tilt the playing field in their advantage. And that is exactly what the renewable energy standards are. It's a mandate. You must procure energy from these sources, and you have to hit ultimately, as it stands right now in statute, I believe, is 12.5% of all the energy in Ohio.
Now, how did we come up with that number? And I know that the legislature said, okay, enough of that. We're not going to increase that. We're going to put a hold on this. And there was a little tug of war. We just spoke with State Representative Keith Faber. And of course, he was last session, he was the Senate president. He moved over to the House. But, there's this tug of war now with the governor with the budget again. But again, the legislature fought back and said, no, we're going to put a cap on that. And he fought over that. And, of course, he vetoed this bill, which would have repealed the mandate requirements of renewables. And so we have a disagreement with the governor, don't we?
Well, I think there is. There's no doubt that there is a disagreement. I think that the majority of the legislature certainly feels that way. There was the bill that passed at the end of the last legislative cycle. It didn't actually completely repeal it. It actually elongated a freeze so that there was no increase in the mandate. So we're currently, you have to procure, and I forget the exact amount this particular year, I think it's somewhere around 2 or 2.5%. But the eventual mandate, when it's fully phased in, is 12.5%. So what they wanted to do was to keep the freeze going on an indefinite base or on a longer-term basis so that the costs don't increase on folks. They don't increase on the utilities, and thus they eventually obviously don't trickle down and get increased on consumers and the folks who have to pay the actual bills. So that was what they initially had proposed last General Assembly. That is the bill that the governor vetoed. Now there's legislation, you referred to it earlier, Chris, where essentially it converts these mandates into goals. And goals are, hey, if you can do it, that's great. And it, and some utilities are going to seek to do this because they think that there's a market for it. They think that consumers are good with this. But this legislation will convert it to goals, not mandates, which means that there isn't a penalty assigned to the utility if they fail to meet those targets. And that's critical because it's that penalty that would be applied that forces them to do certain things and thus also to have the cost trickle down again to the consumers and ratepayers. Also in this legislation is an ability for that to, is a way for that to, any costs that are increased by embracing renewables aren't passed along to the consumers. That's another piece of this legislation, and that's a critical piece as well. So if somebody voluntarily does it, they're not going to be able to just hold their consumers hostage and force them to pay more. And this is such an important issue. Ohio's economy, one of the key things to making this economy hum the way that it needs to hum,
yes,
to create jobs the way that it needs they need to be created, is to be sure that we have reliable, of course, electricity production, but also as cheap as possible electricity production. And we, you know, coal is a massive player in this. Ohio has incredible resources there. Natural gas, as we know, is coming online as well.
That's right.
There is no need to tie the hands of utilities in terms of what they can buy. The free market works because it allows all the people that are out in the marketplace to make free decisions about what makes sense for them. And as that happens, you see competition obviously develop and the prices obviously get lower and you're able to get more bang for your buck, essentially. And everybody benefits from that. Companies obviously benefit from that, and importantly, consumers. And also, critically, big manufacturers. I mean, we're still a very important, manufacturing is still an incredibly important part of Ohio's economy. And manufacturers tend to be extremely energy intensive in terms of the amount of electricity they must use in order to produce the products that they make.
So it has to be cost effective for them to be able to do business in the state of Ohio. We're talking with Greg Lawson, policy director at the Buckeye Institute. We're talking about House Bill 114 that was introduced by State Representative Bill Seitz. It is the Revised Energy Efficiency Provisions is the bill's title. It's going to have a hearing in committee this next week. From what we can see right now, Greg, the Ohio Christian Alliance is going to support this legislation because, again, repealing the renewable mandates, again, we're all about families, we're about seniors, we're about low cost on families because what a burden that is. And we support this legislation because these mandates have basically been subsidies. The consumer and families and seniors have had to pay for the subsidies of wind and solar over the last number of years. It's just ridiculous, driving up utility costs and putting a burden on the electric industry here in Ohio. And, you know, that's ridiculous. And so we want to see lower costs for families and seniors on their everyday expenses. And so that's why we're supporting legislation. It's who we've been since the inception of our organization. We've always advocated for lower taxes on families and against the marriage penalty. And this is within that wheelhouse of our principled position of anything that would help the bottom line for families and seniors. But let's talk about the paper and the report that the Buckeye Institute put out, because you put out some great numbers in actually a detailed report. Give us the direction where people can go and read that report online.
Go to our website, which is simply www.buckeyeinstitute.org. We have a tab for policies, but if you go to our website, you can kind of click down on the latest tab, and then there's a menu that says policy and research and reports. Click there, and I believe it's the top report on there. We obviously do a lot of research on a wide range of issues, but this is our latest piece. And the name of the report is The Impact of Renewable Portfolio Standards on the Ohio Economy. And what we did, we have an economic research center here at the Buckeye Institute. We have a PhD economist who has developed a variety of different types of economic models. And the goal of these models is to be able to replicate based on past data, we're able to create a model that approximates what's happened in the economy over time. And then we're able to calibrate that model. This is a lot of fancy economic speak, but at the end of the day, what you're able to do is say that we can create a model that replicates findings from the past. So we know that this replicates what the data shows to be true. That means that when you input new data, we are able to infer that it is able to show us what we think will be able to happen based upon any number of different kind of inputs to the model that we've created. And so we thought this was an extremely important thing. As I mentioned, energy is a critical piece of our manufacturing base. It's obviously critical for Ohioans in the residential area because it's such a big part of so many people's budget, especially those that are on fixed incomes and at the lower end of the economic ladder. You know, this is a big deal. This is the difference between being able to stay in a home and sometimes and not staying in a home. So this is critical. So what we wanted to do is try to get an understanding of what this looked like. And, you know, we're not able to predict the future with 100% accuracy, but what we can do is look at it and say, what are likely scenarios? So what we did is we actually developed four different scenarios in this report to take a look at what would happen with the renewable standards. And all of them came back. We had some conservative estimates, and we had bolder estimates.
And we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back to discuss those. We're talking with Greg Lawson of the Buckeye Institute. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
And we're back with Greg Lawson of the Buckeye Institute. We're talking about House Bill 114 and repealing the renewable mandate on the energy companies. I'm looking at the report here that the Buckeye Institute produced. The Economic Research Center, ERC, at the Buckeye Institute analyzed the likely economic impacts of the RPS by applying the Economic Research Center's proprietary dynamic model of Ohio's economy. The findings support repealing the mandates entirely under four different scenarios, and that's where we left off. Give us those four different scenarios.
Sure. There was a scenario where we said, look, we keep a freeze on the renewable standards. In other words, they stay at the percentage that they are right now because the renewable standards basically has an escalator, and they increase the percentage that the utilities have to procure from those renewable sources increases on an annual basis. So we said, okay, let's take a look at what happens if we keep the freeze in place. And then there's this thing called renewable energy credits. And this is kind of a complicated subject, but there's this whole marketplace that's been developed where there are basically pieces of paper that say, you know, I bought X amount of megawatts of electricity that were generated from a renewable source. Now, that renewable source, mind you, doesn't have to be in Ohio. It could be in any state at all. But I bought a credit that shows that I'm complying with this mandate. And, I mean, this is, again, it gets very complicated, but it literally are pieces of paper that say I'm buying pieces of paper that were generated by some producer somewhere in the country. And it shows that I am complying effectively with the mandate. So we said, okay, there's a freeze in place initially. There's a scenario where basically we look at what would it be if you didn't have a mandate at all. That's what we call a baseline. So that's your initial assess scenario where you don't have any modifications to it or anything else. So what would the market look like if we just had a free market, basically? Then you look at it with, okay, we have a mandate, but we don't increase the mandate as it is currently programmed to do through the state statute. But these credits that people can buy to comply with that mandate don't increase in price. And we had a scenario where it stays, the mandate is still frozen, but those renewable energy credits increase in price. So they become more. It becomes more expensive to comply, which means it'll be more expensive for consumers eventually because those costs will get passed along to them. Then we looked at a situation where the mandate was allowed to continue as it is presently scheduled to do in statute, but those credits stay relatively static in their price, so they don't increase in price. And then we looked at one scenario where the mandate goes along like it does, is programmed to do under the present statute, but those credits actually increase in cost, which we think is a very likely scenario for a whole bunch of different reasons. Well, it sounds like a lot of complicated stuff, but at the end of the day, what it boils down to is, in each one of these four scenarios, all of them with varying degrees of cost, show cost increases.
Right.
And because of that, it means there's going to be less jobs and less growth of the state economy because energy costs increase, which means that companies who buy energy can invest less in what they're doing.
And that's
what
why
it all
we
shows is it's bad.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why we support the repeal of the renewable mandates and get back to logic and simplicity here. Well, Greg, thanks. We've run out of time. We're going to have you come back on the program. That was Greg Lawson of the Buckeye Institute. Please visit their website and read the complete report. Also next week, program note, we're going to have Mr. Bob Murray of Murray Energy, also Jim Martin of the 60 Plus Association, and Congressman Bill Johnson will be talking about the progress that coal is making a comeback in. So that's going to be good news. But God bless, and we'll see you next night.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.